You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Kim Nickel. She shares a story about asking for something from her boss. So we are just a little bit shy of 200 episodes of this show, The Art of Imperfect Adulting. And I am going to go ahead and share with you that one of the things that I had in mind in my hopes for this show when I was thinking about the concept way back in 2024 was I hoped that people would share both big decisions and changes and also small decisions that they made in their lives. To be fair, I do tend to get a lot more big changes and big choices, and that's fair because those are top of mind for a lot of people. But some of my favorite stories that I share on the show and that I just learn about in my journey through life are small decisions and small changes, even accidental decisions and changes that people make, because it's interesting to me to think about the impact that those small changes have on our lives. I had a lot of fun learning about Kim's story in this conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it too. I kind of hope that it inspires people in the audience, that's you, to go out and ask for some things that you want in your life. So let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Kim Nickel, are you ready for a fun chat today?
Yes, I am.
Yay, happy to hear it. I start all my conversations with the same exact question. What part of the world do you call home?
Well, there's kind of two parts to that answer. One is that I live in San Francisco, so that's what's currently home. But I grew up in Santa Cruz, California, which is a smaller beach town. And that feels like my heart home.
No, I love it. That's a beautiful answer. I used to do when I was younger, I traveled. And one time I was in San Francisco for a trade show at Moscone Center. And I was walked outside for my run. And there was a guy running down the middle of the street screaming the line from, I think it's Mark Twain. It's like, this coldest winter I ever spent was the summer in San Francisco. And it was such a hilarious moment because it was just this guy belting it out in the middle of the street. And I was just like, hey, good morning to you too, sir. All right. Before we go deep, I have another question to get to know you a wee little bit. When you were a kid, did you do after school activities like sports or clubs or whatever? What was it?
I did. For me, it was tennis.
Ah, nice. Tennis. Yeah. Very good. Do you still play tennis?
I don't. I moved from tennis. And then when I went to college, I became a rower.
Okay.
And so I think I have a theme of doing team sports where I don't have to interact with anyone, really.
Fair enough.
Kind of do your own thing, but all together.
Fair enough. No, absolutely. I think of tennis as an individual sport because it's I guess doubles. Doubles, and it's on a team, but it all comes down to you. All right. Not the topic of the day. I'm off track already. We're going to talk about a time when you asked for something big from your boss, from your employer. Are you ready to talk about that today?
Yes, I cannot wait.
I'm excited for the story, actually. You shared with me that this happened when you were 24. What was the job that you had then?
Yeah. So this was my first salaried adult job after college. I had been there for 3 years and I had started as a receptionist, front office manager person. And over time, I got promoted to more of a marketing assistant. And I was working in a small privately owned company. And so it was only 30 people. It was a small organization. It was privately owned. And it was an engineering and development company. So lots of very cerebral thinkers, lots of building happening in that space.
Can I ask, because 24 is super fun age, and you mentioned that you went to college and you had been there for just a couple of years. What did you study in school? Can I ask?
Yeah, I studied marketing.
Okay. All right. And was marketing part of the journalism school, mass communications where you went?
Not exactly. I think marketing was part of they called it the commerce school.
Oh, so business. So
it was
sure.
Business and commerce. And the reason I chose marketing actually is because I saw it as something that was about storytelling.
Okay.
And that to me was very interesting. I thought, oh, it's storytelling, it's writing, but it also has a practical connection in the business world. Like, that's how I thought about it at the time.
Do you think about it the same way today?
There's a little more nuance and a little, you know, kind of more difference around it. I think, you know, at the age of, gosh, you know, in school, in college at 18, 19 to 21, my vision of the world was quite narrow at the time. And I was trying to be really practical and kind of do the practical, realistic thing. And if I were to, you know, give counsel to myself now, I would say, don't put that kind of pressure on yourself right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately I ended up leaving that profession anyways. But I think the element of storytelling and how we make meaning was something that has been a thread throughout my career, even though I don't do marketing now.
Yeah. Have you ever watched the show Mad Men?
No. But
Okay.
I have heard about it. I have heard a lot about it.
It's really advertising, and not everybody's advertising and marketing in the same bucket, but it's like, you know, big advertising in the 50s and 60s is really when the plot line is. And so you might enjoy it. It's really well done. People really like the show. I don't know where it's streaming anymore, but there are some fun things in there. So it's interesting. How did you pick, what were this? Because picking a major in college is absolutely a weirdo thing to do for a lot of people. Some people know what they want to do. I want to make that category. Like, some people know what they want to do, and so then it's not a weirdo thing to do. But there's another category of people who end up in school and they're sort of picking out of a list. Like, do you want to do this, this, or this? And they don't know. How did you choose marketing?
I had been good at most things in school, like kind of a generalist, and I didn't have, you know, one specific thing that I wanted to do the most of, but I did know I was not that interested in studying science and doing a lab or doing chemistry. And so when I was looking at what the different requirements were, I noticed that, well, in marketing in the business school, there's no science requirement. So I could study all of these other things that were interesting and not have to do that part of it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I've got one of those that started school, and all we knew was they did not want to do science. It was just not that. The first plan was just not anything over there. All right, so very good. So here we go. So you're in this job. It's a small company. It's a boutique firm. You're a secretary. You're in the marketing department. Here's the big reveal. Not so big, but let's go with it. What did you ask of your boss?
I asked to take a 10-week sabbatical.
All
I
right.
was
so
24 years old, and that was the longest I had worked without a summer holiday or a long break. And, you know, I knew about this thing called a sabbatical, which is when people step away from their job and then they come back to it after some time. And so I thought, you know, I got this idea in my head. I really just want to go away for a while. I would like to take a sabbatical. I would like to do something different. And so I decided to ask.
All right, so we're going to talk more about that. So I don't like to bury the story. Your boss does say yes. We let the audience know that your boss say yes. And we'll get to that in a second when we talk about that some more. I'm curious what your relationship was like with your boss as we talk about this story. Like, it was a small company, but did you feel like you knew them? Were they authoritarian in their nature with you? Was it, it's a small place, but was there an HR department between the two of you? What was it all like?
Such good questions. There was no HR department. And there was, you know, like, we were all in the same space. So we saw each other on a regular basis. Everybody knew each other. There was a real sense of camaraderie and team in, you know, in a company that small. And when I first made the ask, I think he was just very surprised. Like, I think he was not expecting it. And, you know, he initially, his response wasn't yes or no. His response was, well, if you do that, like, who will do your work? Like, how will it get done? And I said, well, let me think about that and get back to you. And so it was not a single conversation. It was something that happened over time, but it was generally good relationship with everyone in the company. It really was a team effort.
All right. So, This is when I was thinking of the questions of this. I had no idea what size company we were talking about or any of these things. But I was curious whether or not this was something that you had seen happen in the company or you had known anybody who had done this. So let's talk a little bit more about that. Were people taking time off? Was sounds like it's a very hardworking firm. Like, what was the environment around you were that led you to sort of think, I can ask for this?
Yeah, I sometimes ask myself that when I look back on it, because I don't think I realized what an unusually big ask it was for someone that early in their career. It was not something that was happening in the company. You know, we were a very client services oriented business, so everyone was working serving the clients. My role was a little bit different because I didn't have direct client responsibility, and I cannot honestly remember who I saw, or did I know someone? Like, how did this idea come into my mind? Other than the fact, at the time, I was getting really interested in literature and art that had come out of France earlier in the century. And there were so many stories of people from all over the world going to France, making art, having this kind of bohemian life. And I thought, that sounds so nice. Like, I would like to go to France for a while. I would like to study French. I would like to travel around and have an adventure. And so when I kind of landed on this concept of a sabbatical, it felt like, oh, that's the thing you do in order to have that space. Because I was not ready to quit. You know, the sabbatical was unpaid. I said, don't pay me for 10 weeks, but let me go and then let me come back. And it was that idea of knowing I could come back to something that also was very attractive to me.
All right. So let's talk. So then, what would, so, and you may not have an answer for this. When I was in my 20s, like really, truly, for probably most of my life, I think that the only people I knew that did sabbaticals were academics, tenured professors who would take that season off for writing, I think is what they do, although I've never actually done it. So I'm not sure if that's the correct use of the word. So, but I really would never have had any concept of asking about this. I have over the past like decade or so heard about people taking corporate sabbaticals, but there's also the concept of like just a leave of absence. So do you have any memory of where like the word like did you asked for specifically a sabbatical? You had that word in your mind
Yes.
and like you do you know where you picked it up?
I cannot remember where I
Okay.
encountered that word. Yeah.
Did you talk to other people about doing this before you went to your boss? Like, did you run this idea past your family or anybody?
No, I didn't. I just had this idea and I thought, well, first, like, what would I do? If I had that time, what would I do with it? And I started researching, you know, where would I study the language? If I wanted to study French, like, where would I do that? And I found there was a school that you could go to as an adult, and they had, you know, 2 week, 4 week, 6 week courses you could take. I thought, well, where would I live? Like, how would that work? And I did some research and I learned, oh, it's kind of like a dormitory for young adults. And in this case, I found a dormitory specifically for women who were still in school or who were still very early in their career. And oh, like there's a, I could live there when I was in France, and then I could, you know, travel around and stay in youth hostels. And so I think because I had the curiosity to follow the idea, like, what would it look like? What would it be? How could it be? It started to feel more real. Like, yeah, like that's what I want to do. There was a real clear sense of direction. And so I didn't check in with anybody. I didn't say, hey, is it weird to ask for this? When I think back on it now, I think that was honestly part of what made it easier to ask, is because I didn't have any preconceived notion of the scope of it, or of it being weird or not a normal thing. Or I didn't also have an expectation that they would say yes. It really was from this place of, I wonder if they'd be into this.
Wonder if they would be into this. Okay, so there's no corporate policy. You don't know anybody who's done it. There's not an example of it. You have this concept, and you do the research of what you'd like to have happen. It's been a long time since I worked in an office with other coworkers, but back in the day when dinosaurs roamed the earth, and I had coworkers and a boss of my own, It was pretty typical that sometimes people would be nervous to ask for things. They were nervous to ask for raises. They were nervous to ask for time off, even improvements around the office. This was the kind of thing that gave people some jitters sometimes. My question here is, I'm curious about how it actually unfolded. Did you start by sending an email? Did you stop your boss in the hallway on the way to lunch? What was the process of the very first thing you did to begin this process?
My recollection is that it was just a conversation. It was probably in one of our regular check-in meetings, check-in
Sure.
conversations. And I don't remember putting a ton of effort into it. Like I was holding it so lightly. And I was, just came with this idea of, hey, there's something I wanted to ask you about. What do you think about this? This is something I'd like to do.
And he came back, or I don't know, he or she.
Yeah.
He came back and said, "What? Where? Who would do the work? Like, what does this mean?" All right. So it was really the beginning of a conversation. How long did you guys go back and forth and have the discussion before the result was that he said, "Sure, you can go and take this time off."
It was not terribly long. My guess is that he also had to check with the finance guy. He had to check with the CEO, the whole leadership team, because they would all be affected as well. And they had to decide if this was something that they were okay with or if they were not. And so I remember, when we talked about it again, I said, okay, so here's what I'm thinking. Here's how my work will get done. And here are the things that can wait until later. And these things can be distributed across these people and it won't be a heavy burden for these reasons. And I had an answer. Like I had a reason, like in a vision of, yeah, you'll be fine without me. You won't even miss me. It'll be great,
It's going to be fine. So once it becomes public and you've asked for this and people know that you're doing, did you get any feedback from people in your circle about this request and what they thought of you asking your employer for this time off?
People were surprised, but also I think a little envious. And because I was the youngest person in the company, I think there was also that sense of, oh yeah, well she's so young and she's still at the beginning of her career. I wish I could have done that. Or, oh, that's so great that she can do that. But my recollection is that people were genuinely happy for me. They might have just been surprised, like, where did that come from?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that that would have been my reaction if you had been my coworker. I would have been like, really? I love this for you, but like really surprised. Like, I don't think I would have had the confidence or the thought of I'm going to take 10 weeks off. I'm going to take 10 weeks off. Although it sounds like a wonderful thing, and I do that. Okay, so your boss, you come to an agreement. You go to Paris. It sounds like you're taking part in a language immersion program, a cultural immersion
Yes, I did
program.
4 weeks of language immersion and then, 4 to 6 weeks of traveling around France.
Okay, so this you study France, you travel around France. Do you then come home and go back to the job?
I did. I came back to the job. I had a completely different perspective. And this will probably not surprise anyone. I also then started looking for my next move.
Yeah.
It felt like my
Which,
world had
yeah.
just expanded,
Yeah.
And honestly, if I think back too, it was also very low risk for them to let me go because I was not in a really big position. The worst case scenario is their marketing assistant decides to go a totally different direction. They have to rehire, or she comes back and things are great, or she leaves eventually. But I'd been there for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think they had that realistic sense of, there's not a lot of room for me to grow in that organization because I
Okay.
wasn't doing the kind of work that was the client-facing work. So I think they just had a really honest, like kind human perspective of the situation. And I think I just, in some ways got very fortunate that they were
Yes.
willing.
Yeah. So here's a random question that may not have a good answer, but how long ago was this?
This was like 26 years ago.
Okay, so you've got a lot more life experience. If it was your company, your 30-person company, and you had a junior level employee come to you and say, I'd like to take 10 weeks off, What would your, what, if you put yourself in the position of your boss, then what do you think your thoughts would be and your challenges in the same situation?
So context would be really important. The context of where they were in the organization, what their responsibilities were, what I knew of them. It would also matter the way that they presented the
Yeah.
ask. If they presented it in the sense of like partnership or a sense of respect and thoughtfulness, that it wasn't simply something that was carelessly, you know, offered or sort of not offered with a sense of care for being part of something else.
Yep.
And I would also say I understand that we don't all stay in the same job for
Yeah.
years and years and years. So if this is someone that had been here for 3 years, my guess is, you know what, they might be thinking about leaving anyway. And if it won't cost me so much to give them this leave, and if they'll either come back and be refreshed and not burned out and re-energized, great. And if they decide to leave, well, I mean, they might decide to leave anyways.
Yeah. I think my guess, I don't have any research on this, but my guess would be that most often when people ask for this, it is because of circumstances outside of their control and not because they want to take a personal trip. And so if I was to survey US companies, right, where we do less of this, that would be my guess, that that's most often what employers are hearing, like, hey, last minute notice, I need time. And so it's a completely different conversation. I think I would love to know. I would love to know how many people come up with it in their mind where they're like, what I really want is this break, but I don't want to sever the relationship with this firm. And I have
Yeah,
no
and
information on that.
I think you're right. Like, I think there's a really big difference between taking a leave of absence, which
Yeah.
might be around, you know, caretaking or personal health or something of
Yeah.
that nature, compared to a sabbatical. And I've seen more large organizations create sabbatical policies because it's part of what they want in terms of having people for the long term. I think it's much more unusual in small companies.
Right. Because in small companies, you know, you might have been the marketing assistant, but in a really small company, pretty much everybody does whatever's needed on that day.
Absolutely.
And so that puts pressure on, and your boss did come to you and was like, all right, but listen, who's going to do what you're supposed to be doing? And then when you were describing it, that you were saying, well, you know, you won't even miss me. I was thinking, oh, well, I wonder if they then thought, well, what is she actually doing then? Like, do we need this? If she can be gone for 10 weeks, do we actually need her? Which is totally a workaholic capitalistic frame of mind, but it was where my mind went. Okay, so there are two questions, two things here. Same question about two ideas. All right, which is maybe bad phrasing, but let's see if it works. Okay. The question is, looking back, what impact did these two things have on your life? One is the power of asking for something that you want. Like, so what was the impact of doing that? And the other is the actual experience of being in France, which you touched on a second ago. How did each of those impact your life looking forward?
The first one, just that awareness of it's okay to want something, it's okay to ask for something, has been a through line throughout my life. And it's interesting because I, you know, the reason I really, you know, was thinking about that story today, you know, 26 years later, is because so much of the work that I do now in coaching and working with new managers, I tell people, ask if your work will sponsor you for professional development.
Yep.
Whether that's because you want to work with me or you want to go to a conference or you want to take a course or there's something that you want, they might be willing to say yes. They might have the budget for it. It's okay to ask for it. And so many people, I mean, even when I was working corporate, it didn't occur to me to ask for professional development budget because I had this mindset of I have to just do everything myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hardworking, I'm self-reliant, I don't need help, you know, I can do it on my own. And that experience that I had all those years ago continues to ripple through my life and remind me, you can ask for things. It's okay. They might even say yes. Be willing to be pleasantly surprised at what someone might say yes to.
Yeah, I think that's a valid, very valid point. I think that a lot of, especially in technology and other places, I think probably in a lot of things, sometimes if you have the right corporate environment, it's like built in. It's like they want you to keep learning the new things, and they will do that. And when I was very young, I remember being in a meeting and somebody said, "Well, do you know how to do this?" And I was like, "I have no idea how to do this." And the person I was working with was like, "Well, why don't you go figure out how you can learn and come back and tell me what we need to do?" And I was like, "All right, I'll go do that." But yes, okay. So, and then the experience, so that is a very through line. That's a good through line. How about being in France and having that 10-week exposure to something that was different from anything that you had? That may not be true, but having that 10-week exposure to the language and the culture and being able to travel and take that trip.
It was incredible to have the experience of just seeing how people do things differently. Everything from there's so much public transit. Oh, you can just take the metro or take a train. That was incredible. And also meeting people in the language school who also were from other parts of the world and learning French. It was fun to just meet other people who were there for different reasons, but we were all learning and having this shared experience together. And one of the things that really stayed with me that just kind of just occurred to me as we're talking, it was so interesting for me to see how much multi-generations of people were just out and about. Like you'd see these groups of, elderly people laughing and going, on a hike or going to a museum. There, I felt like, oh, I don't feel like elderly people in, where I grew up, like, I don't feel like they're as visible. There are not as many places for them to go and do things and hang out. And here it just seemed, if you walk through the garden or the museum or the park or the cafe, you see people of more generations, from little kids to elders, just being there together.
I do think that's a cultural difference between Europe and the United States, that we tend to group our like we tend to group together by age. So it's much more typical that I don't know that in France they have the active adult communities that we have here, where people like it's like 55, go move in with your 55-year-old friends. So then they stay in Paris or the town that they were. But I'm not sure about that. I'm not an expert on it. I definitely think so. Had you done anything before, like exchange student or other international travel, or was this your first experience with living abroad?
This was my first experience traveling abroad by myself.
Okay.
Earlier, one of my very best friends had done an abroad program in Argentina, and I went down just to visit her. So I had that experience with her. And then when I was a kid, we also traveled to the Philippines because that's where my mother is from.
Oh,
So we
that's
had
right.
done travel to Asia as a family. So that sense of traveling and being overseas was a little bit familiar, but this was the first time that I went for an extended period by myself with a trip that I had planned and made happen on my own.
It sounds like a spectacular trip, I have to tell you. What sparked, if you remember, the interest in French and France?
I was reading a lot of Dorothy Parker.
Oh.
And if you're not familiar with her, I don't know if you are.
Sure. Yeah. So
But
very good.
yeah.
And do you remember what brought the other people that were in your housing arrangement for the language school? What brought them to do the program? Was it similar to you, like personal exploration, or do you remember what they were attracted by?
I think with some of them, it was part of their gap year or part of their education. Some of the folks were from Japan, some were from Austria, so they were from kind of all the reaches of the world. And yeah, they're for different reasons.
Very interesting. So I spent a year, a school year abroad in France, and so they put us together in the immersion program at the beginning, and they had a rule that they wanted us to be, they didn't want all of the English speakers to glom together. And I was sort of lucky and sort of not, but my first group had a Dutch person and a Belgian person, so I had three English speakers in my group, and I was totally cheating. And then they caught on and they paired me up with other people, and I had to speak to them in French in my living quarters, which was my French got better quickly, but it was much harder. So that was one of the things that made me think of that. Okay, so you have your own podcast these days. If people want to learn more about you and discover it, tell us about that. It's called the New Manager Podcast. Tell us what it's about, and I'll be sure to put the link in the show notes.
Yes, the New Manager podcast is about the human side of work and leadership.
Okay.
And yeah, I started it because I found that there was not a lot offered to people when they became managers, either right as they were rising into that first level of leadership and people management. And so I thought there's so many, stories and so many ideas that are helpful when you become a manager for the first time, because it's such a different job. And especially if you care about people and you want to give feedback, but you don't want to hurt people's feelings or you're not sure how it will land, we need to have some conversations about that. So that is what the New Manager podcast is all about, being human at work.
I think that that's a really good point, especially for people who are not people who study management as a thing. You can get promoted based on the fact that you're good at doing the thing, which doesn't mean necessarily that you're good at managing the people who are doing that thing. And we've all worked in places where the manager we have, we don't think they're the best. So this improving the skills is a really nice idea. Okay, so before we wrap this up, you have a very generous gift for the people in the audience, which is a self-advocacy roadmap. It's a worksheet that helps people with self-advocacy. It's a PDF. They can download it. There's a link in the description of the show and the show notes. The easiest way for people to find these links, if they don't want to crawl through the show notes, is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I zap it into your email box and you can just click on it. Thank you very much, Kim, for that. Are you ready for the final questions?
Yes, ready.
All right, excited. Everybody, my latest guests have all been expecting this and they've been totally ready. It's completely different than when I started a year ago. All right, here we go. Is there a food or a dish that you don't like? Something that you don't like so much that even if you were a guest in someone's home and they were hosting and they offered it to you, you would have to politely decline.
Yes, it would be eggplant. It's a texture thing for me.
I love that question. All right. Thank you for sharing that. No eggplant for Kim. If you are not going to cook for yourself, do you prefer to eat out in a restaurant or get delivery or takeout? And you can share if you want your one of your favorite local eating places if you have one.
Yeah, I usually do takeout because I like to be cozy. And often when I'm not, cooking for myself, I will get takeout and go to my boyfriend's place and then we'll be
Okay.
cozy together and feed him too. So it becomes just a really nice experience.
All right, takeout for you. All right, very good. All right, so if you happen to believe in the people who share things on TikTok, then you would agree that we are in the age of the multi-step, like 16 to 24-step skincare routines. Do you have any tools or gadgets that are in your get ready routine that are so important that you would never want to leave them behind or travel without them?
SPF,
Oh.
right? Sunscreen is it?
Never leave home without it.
Absolutely.
All right, I totally get it. That's it. Kim Nichol, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.